My name is Ronan Spoon. I've actually got two to read tonight. One of them's really long, so we're going to offset that with a really short one. So the first thing I'm going to read is the Ultimate Zen Node. Now we're going to move on to the next one. Let me go over it again. Did you get it that time? All right. The next one, and this is a lengthy one, so I'm going to have to apologize in advance. I was kind of hoping you guys wouldn't pick this because it's going to take freaking ever. This is Two Stories of the Pistol. This is a more or less factual event that happened to me when I was stationed in Saudi Arabia. An unfashionable sense of patriotic duty had landed me in the military, and the army had sent me to Saudi Arabia. The Gulf War had been over for a few months, and we were well into a miasma of operations that earned me a Bronze Service Star for being involved in three combat operations simultaneously. Operation Desert Storm was just ending, and Operation Southern Watch was just picking up. And I can't for the life of me remember what the other one was. Maybe Operation Desert Possum. They all start to sound the same after a while. The war may have been essentially over, but someone forgot to tell Saddam. He was still shelling his own population with chemical agents, flying the occasional sortie through the no-fly zone, and every once in a while, he'd lob a Scud missile towards one of his neighbors. Because the war was over, most of the troops deployed for combat had returned back to the States, leaving the Brents all nervous and unprotected. They'd never admit to wanting us around, but they needed help bad, because not only did Saddam want us out, but some of the Saudis weren't too happy that we were still hanging around either. That's where me and my ilk came in. We were infantrymen deployed as combat security support. Basically, we were combat soldiers attached to the 3rd Army Corps to be deployed as necessary to provide security for missile sites and the occasional patrols. Same old work, different description. Because the war was technically over, though, we had severe restrictions on our rules of engagement. We were knee-deep in non-combat operations, and the air was thick with orders of non-confrontational aggression at any cost, as long as no one was hurt or intimidated. The Army is full of double negatives and contradictions, but I had enough conflict and orders to make a libertarian choke on their civil rights. We were supposed to protect United States personnel, equipment, and interests with deadly force, if there was absolutely no other course of action. If terrorists stormed the perimeter and we could positively identify a threat, then we were authorized to request permission to load our weapons. To prevent any accidental wounding, harming, or frightening of alleged hostile forces, we were required to store ammunition magazines in a button pocket, not our ammo pouches, with a piece of tape securing the top cartridge. I do not have the words to describe how frustrating this was. Simply thinking about it now, almost 10 years later, sets my teeth to grinding in tempered anger. Grr. Grr. I ended up spending most of my time providing ingress-egress security and developing the offensive and defensive capacity of one Patriot missile site on the outskirts of Riyadh, located very close to what I'm told was the largest oil refinery in the world. The site was an environmental nightmare. One tower of the refinery burned a gigantic flame day and night, shifting from orange to bright purple, and generated a sickly column of smoke that occasionally drifted amongst us. By the frightening red light of the flame, you could see the large patches of dark sand along the perimeter that turned to viscous pools of bubbling ook in the heat of the day and would snag the boots of the unwary soldier. Our ECP had a simple but effective procedure. ECP? That's an acronym. It means entry control point. You probably call it a gate. The entire site was surrounded by a double-stranded chain-link fence topped with triple rolls of concertina wire separated by 20 feet. The only way in or out was through a gate that was directly in front of the largest bunker that looked out on the channeled approach road, and sat between the loops of fencing. A vehicle would approach the gate from the outside and stop, disgorging its cargo of personnel. We wouldn't leave the bunker until the passengers left the vehicle. If it was after dark, the vehicle's lights had to be extinguished as well. There was a spotlight and PA at our disposal to communicate this to those unaware of the policy. After leaving the vehicle, the passengers approached the locked gate and surrendered identification to me, and I checked the ID against an access list. The list held the name of everyone who needed and could gain access to the very secure facility. I was like the Patriot missile bouncer, no name, no entrance. If their names were not on the list, the gate was unlocked, and they entered the dead zone. I said that wrong. If their names were on the list, the gate was unlocked and they entered the dead zone between the fences. The interior entrance of the dead zone was a triple strand of concertina wire that could be moved to provide for personnel or vehicle passage. Once in the dead zone, all personnel were subject to search at my discretion before they could pass through to the interior of the site. I was in constant radio contact with my partner Dan, 50 yards away in an elevated bunker with an M249 saw machine gun in an overwatch position. His job was to watch me, and if I were to become incapacitated somehow, he would then litter the dead zone with 5.56 caliber NATO FMJ till the sand ran red and his belt ran dry. The process worked exactly the same, but in reverse if you wanted to exit the site. In the dead zone, my authority... What the hell is the screensaver coming on for?
It's in the dead zone.
In the dead zone, my authority was nearly absolute. It is a matter of the utmost military doctrine that the gate guard has operational authority that exceeds the rank of anyone entering his area of responsibility. Without this basic doctrine, anyone who could stuff themselves into a uniform could parade through blustering orders and relying on the terror of military discipline to walk straight by security. I was expected and trained to use this authority with discretion and only exercise it when absolutely necessary to protect the site and its personnel. Unfortunately, some people always believe the rules don't apply to them. The first pistol. It was a hot evening. They all were, really. Saudi Arabia is the most loathsome place I've ever been. It was full of garbage, it stunk, and it was always so damn hot. It was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd been amusing myself on guard duty by staring at the dark nothingness with my PBS-7 night vision goggles when I noticed a vehicle approaching the gate down the access road. I took a sip of water before storing the goggles and calling Dan on the radio. Heads up. Vehicle's approaching. Roger, I got it. Looks like one of ours. A Cutby. A Cutby was Army talk for a commercial utility cargo vehicle. They were really just GM trucks or Blazers painted in military colors. Chances are it was one of ours, but it was a strange time for one to roll in, and we weren't expecting anyone. Even if we had, I'm the cautious type. While I watched the Cutby slowly wind its way through the zigzag pattern of concrete barriers and concertina wire, I checked my ammo and weapons. When I reached the gate, the vehicle stopped. It sat there and idled for a few moments before it became clear that they were unaware of the procedure. I turned on the spot and addressed the vehicle over the PA. Turn off your vehicle's attention and ignition and LED lights. Exit the vehicle and approach the gate with ID ready. From the vehicle, I heard an angry reply. Open this damn gate! I repeated my instructions exactly as before, but I was nervous. As long as I had been there, no one had ever challenged the procedure. Once instructed, compliance was always forthcoming, and the fact that they seemed in no hurry to do as I said captured my suspicion. I had to tell them 3 times before they realized that I wasn't going to open the gate until they did as I instructed. As soon as they approached the gate, I left the bunker. Keying my mic, I called Dan. Approaching the gate! Keep your eye on me, I got a bad feeling. I got your back, Dan's short reply eased my tension a little. He was all business when it came to the soldier stuff, and he took his responsibility seriously. 2 men in Desert BDUs waited to be at the gate. I didn't salute because they weren't officers, and I wouldn't have if they were. I didn't know who these guys were. I didn't know who these guys were yet, but I wasn't doing a favor for any snipers watching us. The first one to speak was a tall, skinny black man, and his companion was a short, stout white guy. They were a sitcom waiting to happen. Open this goddamn gate, specialist. I could see now that the tall one was a sergeant major by his collar stripes. Shorty I saw was a first sergeant, and he piped in his 2 cents as well. Do you know who the hell we are? Let us in! Sergeant Major, first sergeant, can I see some ID, please? I held my hand out in the universal gesture of gimme, shortly blustered again. I don't need any damn ID. This is my fucking site, now open this goddamn gate. Respectively, first sergeant, sergeant major, this is my gate. And I don't know you, and you aren't getting through without showing me some ID. If it makes you happy, I'll show you some ID, specialist, but you damn better let me in, or I'll have your ass in a fucking sling. Spit out the sergeant major. I collected their IDs and compared them against my access roster. They were not on the roster, and this was going badly. My apologies, sergeant major, first sergeant, but you're not on the access roster, and I cannot authorize you entrance into the site. Please return to your vehicle. As I expected, this news did not go over well. Sergeant Major's eyes bugged out and his mouth was moving, but no real sound was escaping. The first sergeant was fuming and getting angry. As soon as the sergeant major found his voice, he started using it. You fucking snot! I authorize it! I'm the goddamn sergeant major of this goddamn unit! These fucking missiles wouldn't be here if I hadn't told them to be here! Every word he used was hurled at me with venom. Spittle was running down his chin in quivering little rivulets of rage. I placed my right hand on the holster Beretta service pistol in my hip. Sergeant Major, First Sergeant, if you would like to return in the morning or return with authorization from the site commander, I would be more than happy to let you pass. But you're not on my list. If you're not on the list, you can't come in, plain and simple. I've got my orders and I ain't violating them because I don't know you. soon as my hand touched my pistol, Dan radioed me. Spoon, what's the word? You are... Who are these guys? I tucked the clipboard into my left arm and fumbled with the mic, never taking my hand off the pistol. DeGar, ECP, I have a situation here. I got a sergeant major and a first sergeant on the list. Say they want to come in. Over. Sergeant DeGar was our squad leader, and in the time-honored military tradition, I was attempting to shovel the responsibility of this fiasco onto him. Tall man and shorty could hear my radio conversation. They glared at me while I waited for a response. ECP, DeGar, no list, no access. Tell them to talk to the CO. Over. I already told them that. They aren't shit. They had heard DeGar's response and apparently didn't like it. Sergeant Major mounted the fence and was clearly attempting to climb over it. The gate was the one section that didn't have concertina at the top, as it would have interfered with the operation of the gate. I guess the Sergeant Major believed he could scale the fence and tell me in person how much he didn't like our policies. In one swift, long practice motion, I dropped my clipboard and pulled the loaded magazine from my left cargo pocket while pulling the pistol from its holster. I stripped the asinine tape from the magazine and slammed it up the well, chambering the first round before Tall Man had reached the top of the fence. Shorty hit the dirt and my radio burst into sound. ECP, DeGar, status report. DeGar, Overwatch, one of them's trying to climb the fence. You better get your ass down here, Sergeant. I think Spoon's going to shoot one of them. I thought my voice was surprisingly calm given the situation. Get your ass off my fucking fence, shitbird. This is a secure facility and I've been authorized to use deadly force. Sergeant Major, don't make me fucking shoot you. Hundreds of dollars worth of therapy. He reached the top of the fence and glanced down the muzzle of my weapon. He took a second and seemed to reconsider his position, but his voice was still full of venom. This is my goddamn site and I am the authority here. You point that goddamn pistol somewhere else. I fired a warning shot in the air. The sharp crack of the pistol made Shorty jerk from his position, kneeling in the sand. I thought that might not be enough to defuse the situation, so I chose a few words as well. Get off my fucking fence or I will burn you down. I'm not fucking around with you anymore and I will cripple your ass if you make one more move towards this compound. Stealing my thunder, baby. In the brief silence that followed, my radio erupted in activity. Overwatch, chamber and ammo, ECP, status. Perimeter penetration, ECP, no drill. By the time I had delivered my speech, Sergeant DeGar and the rest of my squad had run up with M16s at the shoulder. Sergeant DeGar spoke up. Stand down from my fence or we'll fucking perforate you. You have 5 seconds to comply. Tallman had apparently seen the wisdom of a safe retreat and clambered down on the side of the fence before DeGar had to start counting. The situation diffused from there, although the night seemed to last forever. Within an hour, the place was crawling with brass. Sergeant Major Fredericks and First Sergeant Williams were granted access to the site eventually, although their surprise inspection had been blown by their antics. The Sergeant Major attempted to get me court-martialed on the spot for insubordination and attacking his superior, but once the Colonel came around and heard all the stories, he denied the Sergeant Major's vengeance with a short dissertation. You're lucky this kid has a long fuse and a level head. I'd have shot your ass dead, Fredericks. Can I go back to bed now? Thanks for that coffee. The second pistol. Time passed as it is wont to do, but few things ever change. It was still miserably hot, but this time it was morning. Of course, it was always miserable, especially so when the wind kicked up the sand. It would blow just enough to lift dust in the air, but not enough to aid in evaporative cooling. The morning shift, the missile crew members had arrived in their shuttle bus, and I was going through the despised process of admitting them to the site. Checked the ID card, checked the list, opened the gate, closed the gate, repeated as necessary. I'd have to do the whole damn thing again in 20 minutes when the crew they were leaving left the site. It was boring, long, and everybody resented it. They resented me for making them wait in the heat, and I resented them for existing and not understanding that I was doing it for their own damn protection. We all hated it, but we all did it. I got a lot less crap from them after taking a shot at Sergeant Major Fredericks. In the middle of this long, draining process, a cut B roller to the dead zone wire from the interior of the site. I turned and saw it was the comm sergeant. He wanted egress. I made a hand gesture that spoke volumes. Cool your jets, give me a second. Sergeant Tannen didn't have a second, apparently, so he leaned on the horn to let me know how important his business was. I sighed, locked the gate, and approached the driver's side door. Open the gate, I'm going out, he said, like I was supposed to simply do as he said, completely ignoring everyone else and the security of our shared post. I'm in the middle of letting the crew in, Sergeant Tannen. As soon as they've cleared the zone, then we can let you out. but I can't have two groups coming and going at the same time. Give me a couple minutes, and you'll be on your way. Half of the crew was still waiting outside the perimeter, sweating and looking unhappy at this new delay. I didn't blame them. They just wanted to get out of the sun, and this asshole was ruining it for everyone. I returned to the gate to finish letting the crew in. I hadn't processed one person when my radio sparked to life. Spoon, check your six. I turned to Tan and detailed the private from the passenger seat to get out and move the wire barrier so he could drive through. Cursing, I locked the gate again and approached the cut V. I was shouting now, get the fuck away from that, private. Sergeant Tan, turn off the vehicle's ignition and exit the vehicle. You will wait here until the crew shift has completed, and then you may exit the site. I'm an E5. You can't order me around. Open the damn grate or I'll run you over. To emphasize his point, he pulled forward through the gap in the wire his private had cleared. I stood in the path of the vehicle and slapped my hand on the burning hot hood of the truck. My other hand was on my holster pistol. He edged forward again, nudging me backwards towards the gate. Stop this vehicle and exit, or I'll treat you as hostile. He either hadn't heard the story about Sergeant Major Fredericks or didn't care. Either way, he was pushing the same buttons. I'm a fucking sergeant. Now open that fucking gate, specialist. The clipboard was down, and the first round was chambered before Sergeant Tannen could blink. I lined up the post with his eyebrow and told him how it was as I walked toward the driver's door. Turn off the fucking engine and get your ass out of the vehicle. His eyes were wide and his lips were twitching like he wanted to talk but couldn't. Why do they always do that? But he turned off the engine and opened his door as I heard my radio squawk. Degar, overwatch. I think Spoon's going to shoot somebody again. I'm on my way, Dan. Keep him covered. Before Sergeant Tannen could exit the cut V, I grabbed him in a wrist lock with my free hand and spun him to the soft sand. By the time Sergeant Degar arrived, Tannen and his private were both on their knees, zip-cuffed with their noses buried in the sandbags of my bunker. Status report, Spoon. I gave Degar the skinny, told him that I had warned Tannen and he had tried to force his way through the barricade. Well, he didn't fire around this time, so I don't care what you do. Just don't shoot anyone, and I'll rely on your judgment. Degar returned to the HQ trailer to call the CO and advise him of the situation and to tell him not to expect his relief crew to take their post for a while. Just as I said, I treated Tannen and his private as hostile and searched their vehicle for contraband for 40 minutes. The two of them stayed kneeling in the dirt, pouring their sweat into the sand as the 120-degree heat beat them down. They really didn't have much of a choice. The relief crew stood outside and cursed me and Tannen, although towards the end, they were cursing Tannen more than me. When I was done with the search, I let the crew on site, and then, true to my word, I cut Tannen and his private free and let them exit. Tannen tried to have me court-martialed too, of course. I didn't even make it past his first sergeant. First Sergeant Williams remembered his turn at the gate and graced me with these parting words. Thanks for not shooting Tannen. He's an ass, but he's a good comm sergeant. I don't think he'll give you any more hassle. Truth is, none of them did. A few even smiled the next day.